S.R. Haddon had other unresolved issues to tackle, the most important of which was revenge against his older brothers for his father's murder. Remember, the moral authority of the Assyrian king needed to be established very firmly. And so if a father had been killed, the king would have had to make sure that this death was avenged. His brothers had fled north to the Taurus Mountains, near Urartu, to the land of Shubria. The king who provided sanctuary for them came to regret his decision. In the 8th year of his rule, Esarhaddon led a powerful force into the mountains. And with the arrival of the Assyrian army on his doorstep, the Shubrian king begged for mercy. He realized what he had gotten himself into. And we see here the success of the Assyrian policy of trying to intimidate enemies. The king of Shubria even sent a statue of himself wearing shackles around his feet, but enveloped in a large cloak of gold, a very obvious bribe to try and appeal to Esarhaddon's mercy. It was too late, as Esarhaddon related in his letter to the gods about these events. Esarhaddon lectured the king that it was too little, too late. He wrote, "After your sacrifices, you bathe. After the rain, you install drain pipes." The king was killed, as were the parasites. Esarhaddon's military exploits, in general, compare very well with his father and grandfather. He is best known for his campaigns against Egypt. Before he attempted this bold expedition, he tried to ensure a peaceful succession, something that he himself had not had. All of the subject states of Assyria were called to swear their allegiance to the next king. His oldest son, Shamash-shuma-ukin, would be the next king of Babylonia, but a younger son, Ashurbanipal, would rule the empire. This was not equal rule, since Ashurbanipal was the designated heir, but probably was a way to try and reassure the Babylonians that they would have very strong representation at the Assyrian court. And Esarhaddon likely hoped that this would create a more regular succession than he had experienced. Clearly, Ashurbanipal was the favorite. He was trained to rule. He had the support of his grandmother, Nakia. Her name is listed in this loyalty oath that the Assyrian states were required to take. The internal stability during Esarhaddon's rule allowed him to move farther west. Esarhaddon led a total of 2 invasions of Egypt. The second, in 671 BC, was successful, and he added Egypt to the Assyrian Empire, although just for a brief period. In fact, a few years later, Esarhaddon died while en route to Egypt in 669 BC to try and put down a revolt there. Esarhaddon had numerous illnesses throughout his life, and he wrote about them quite a bit. Sometimes he's seen by modern scholars as a hypochondriac because he writes about his poor health so often. He certainly was not a well man. And remember that illness in Mesopotamian cultures was considered a sin or a moral flaw. So when it occurred in a king, it was even more serious and worthy of note and treatment. Esarhaddon was also plagued by several bad omens, lunar and solar eclipses, that occurred during his rule. And these celestial changes were never a good sign for a king. Often, they were used to predict a king's impending death. Esarhaddon took many steps to try and ward off this potential evil outcome, requiring numerous loyalty oaths, and even putting a substitute king on the throne. This is a practice by which a man in later cultures during the Persian era, we know it was sometimes a convicted criminal. We're not sure about what the Assyrians did, but a substitute was put on the throne while the king escaped. He's described as being a farmer. And the substitute king would attract all of the bad spirits that were being directed against the man who sat on the throne. The substitute king would be killed, and this supposedly would return the universe to its balance.